Good morning! This is filmmaker David Giancola, and you're listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'll see you in the future.
Scrolling for April 23rd, 2024. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hessenflow.
We're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. If you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information. This week, Chip, happy birthday to William Shakespeare turning 460 today. Happy birthday, April 23rd.
When one
1564.
Talks, when one talks as a thespian state,
yes,
one must use the words one.
Shakespeare made the words. There are so many times where the idea of language starts and ends with Shakespeare with me. I love all of the phrases that have entered the English language because Shakespeare wrote them down.
Isn't it interesting, though, when you start reading Shakespeare, that it may take a few pages and all of a sudden the flow goes and all of a sudden you start getting into
the rhythm. That rhythm, there's something magical to rhythm and music. We'll talk a lot more about music, but the idea of the rhythm, of the rhyme, of the poetry that is William Shakespeare is something special for me.
And you know you're getting old when you have your final performance, Steve. What is our character?
Oh, when you're Richard III? Yes. Oh, dear, Richard III.
I was a Shakespeare actor.
Now I'm on this Star Trek of some sort. Absolutely.
By Grab Thar's hammer, Steve.
Film at 11.
Brings to our film at 11, our movie of the week. You saw The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. That is a title that I've been practicing for the last 20 minutes.
Yeah, it seems like a little bit much, right?
It's a little bit much. So is it a little bit much? Is that title emblematic of the story that we get here?
No, this is actually a great story. Okay. I mean, in fact, I'm sure the book could be better than this movie. But this is a Guy Ritchie film.
Okay.
So you know it's going to be very stylish.
You know what you're getting into with Guy Ritchie. He has a specific style. Lots of violence, I'm sure.
Very manly.
Uh-huh.
It is a very manly...
Ungentlemanly?
Yes. In fact, I really like the cast a whole bunch. I like the story that comes out of this. It is a very slick movie, though.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something that is, maybe a little bit too slick from it. Because you've heard the term Mary Sue, where the person who is our lead can do no wrong. They've mastered everything.
Understands everything instantly.
Okay, but the difference is that this is a true story, and this may have happened just the way it happened.
Based on a true story. We'll see. Okay, go on.
So Churchill, during World War II, when Hitler is doing everything he can in Europe,
uh-huh.
Certainly put together this team, this clandestine team, who, if the British caught them, they would all go to jail. And if the Nazis caught them, they would all die.
Mm-hmm.
And the deal was they had to go down to Africa and they were to blow up this ship. Once again, a true story. And no one knew about this except for a very small team. The small team included the Dread Pirate Roberts.
Oh, Cary Elwes. Okay, got you.
And also, the real life Ian Fleming. So,
but not real life, because you're confusing me with characters versus actors.
Yes. So
in the real story, real life.
This is Ian Fleming's, one of his job. He is a advisor to Churchill, and he is one of these characters. The guy who's leading this mission could be the basis for James Bond.
Hmm.
So, this is a true real-life James Bond type of group.
Okay.
And our story is they have to go bust out one of the guys who's going to do these missions through a Nazi camp. This guy's being held as prisoner. They bust him out, and then that guy helps him get down to blow up this ship. This is a fun story. And I think it's, if you're going to the movies and you're looking for that entertainment type of film,
okay,
that's got action and beautiful people and all that other stuff and Nazis, this is the one you want to go see.
Okay. So compare it to Indiana Jones for me, because you said Nazis and adventure, and I'm thinking Indiana Jones.
Well, it was a real life type of Indiana Jones.
Okay.
Our crew is like 5 or 6 people. They all have specialties. They're all really good at what they do, and they all accomplish this mission in real life. As the credits are rolling, you get to see the real ones.
Okay.
And they all had crazy careers afterwards where they did incredible things too. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't like a one and done type of thing.
All right. Henry Cavill as one of the main characters here, not quite Superman.
No, he's Clark Kent, Steve.
He's Clark Kent here. Okay. Yes. I'm intrigued. I'm not a huge fan of action adventure stories in general.
Sure.
But is there enough comedy, humor, fun to this?
Steve, it's a whole movie of like good looking people going on adventure.
Okay.
And the music is probably the weakest part of it.
Okay.
There is a song that gets sung in it, and it's probably not as sexy as they want it to be.
Okay.
But I will say that, you know, I absolutely enjoyed it. I truly did.
All right.
It was fun, and for the people who were there, they had a good time too.
All right. I will endorse your viewing of that film. You also got a chance to see The Long Game. This is the story of 5 young Mexican-American caddies and their love of golf in 1955.
So this is 1955. So, you know, after World War II. And, you know, most of the time we get stories that have racism, that usually an urban environment, and it's black people or Jewish people or whatever the minority is of the time, Irish or Italian. But this is near the border of Mexico and Texas. So if you were looking at Texas and you were looking at the border of Mexico and Texas, you're not on the east side with Padre Island or McAllen or anything like that. You're not on the west side with El Paso. You're sort of in between.
Okay.
And this, after the war, this gentleman who is Mexican-American came down to be a superintendent for a school. And he found these 5 kids who had created the equivalent of a golf course.
They created their own golf course for the love of the game.
Absolutely. So they dug out the greens. They had to clean up the greens. They made some rules. Basically, they played 2 or 3 holes over and over and over to create their 18 holes. But they were really good. And this guy loved golf. And because he was Mexican-American, he was not allowed to join the elite golf club at the time. But he decided to start this team at the school. And these kids ended up winning the state championship. Our story is a true story.
A second true story. 2 true stories in a row.
And many of these kids left high school, and they joined the military, had careers of their own, but they all loved golf. They all play golf throughout their entire life. And at the end, as they're rolling the credits, we get the real life people there. So with our first movie with the Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, I'd say 62 out of 100.
Okay.
I'll say this one is 55 out of 100. I do think that there's something a little bit missing in this. Certainly, if you were sitting down with your kids and you watched this, this is the type of film you wanted to watch. It's kind of it's not a Disney film, but it could have used a little Disney part to it.
That feel-good family story of these kids succeeding is there.
Yeah, and it looks like Dennis Quaid and his wife were the producers of this film. And it just, they just were too good. You know, I never got to learn why golf is important, how to get better at golf. Like, usually they give some trick like, hey, keep your head down or something like that. These kids seem to always be good. And while they certainly got better, there was no real drama that you see in some sports films.
So this was not the Bad News Bears.
Well, that's right. It didn't have that ending. But, you know, there's no doubt that they experienced challenges. And one of the questions you have to ask yourself, now, once again, this is 1955. Mm-hmm. And racism is big. You sit down in a restaurant and you're not of that, you know, a white race, they don't serve you, mm-hmm. that type of thing. But really, you've got to ask yourself, how much should you put up with someone being obviously cheating and being racist at the same time?
Hmm.
And that's part of our story. And initially, the recommendation was, you know, don't say anything. Don't let them rile you up. Our goal is to win the match. Our goal is not to create ruffle feathers. But that doesn't always work. And, you know, part of the message is that sometimes you just need to be proud of where you came from. And one of the statements he said is don't speak Spanish on the golf course.
Mm, language is certainly one of those things that divides us.
But mm-hmm. but at the end, it was okay.
Mm-hmm.
It was okay.
Okay.
So I did like this film, 55 out of 100. And I do think it's like that family film that you throw out on the lawn. You know, you put the
put the screen in the backyard and watch in the backyard. Backyard family film. I've seen a few of those lately, and several of them have fallen flat. And I think that we are in an era where media has changed, and maybe this was edited for Netflix instead of a theatrical run.
I don't disagree. In fact, both of these. Mm-hmm. What we're running into are we have all these amazing toys available to us. But we're not, they're just not, either we've watched too much media and it's not blowing us away,
mm-hmm.
Or it's just not for the ages.
Hmm.
And they're trying, and these are reasonable films, and historically maybe they're better than average, but they're just not, you know, once you see a really good film that really kind of impacts you, you just go, why can't they all be that way?
They can't. That's the answer. I am intrigued by the diversity of the types of films that are out there. There's so many different stories that can be told, and those are two very interesting titles.
Book it.
Brings us to our book of the week. You have read an interesting book this week, The Origins of Woke, Civil Rights Law, Corporate America, and the Triumph of Identity Politics. This was published in 2023 by Richard Hanania.
And this book came out maybe in October of last year. It's one of those books that I saw, certainly a provocateur type of title.
Mm-hmm.
But we live in a society that, you know, you can kind of view things and you're going, something's interesting going on.
Maybe history has changed in the last few years. Uh-huh.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where you want to sit back and you know, have a person kind of reflect and kind of show, you know, how we evolved to where we are.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is a book that, you know, I encourage you that if you have interest in this, to kind of explore. I think this person, it is a scattered approach. But I think there's a lot to glean from this, and maybe it'll explain something of why maybe things are different from when you were younger.
At least something to contemplate, at least a place to start your thinking of why are we doing the things we're doing.
So one of the things I got out of this was certainly how civil rights law had evolved. And when the bills were looking to be passed back in the 60s, they were throwing things in it with hopes of killing the bill, but the bill passed. And they've been slowly evolving.
Hmm.
And the evolution of this has led to this growth of compliance.
Hmm.
Because you can be sued. If you're a corporation, if you are a university, you're a business, you are a government agency, compliance is a huge deal. And so there were times where things were happening that an objective person could look at and say, oh, there was discrimination there.
Correct.
One of the challenges of that is we've created this bureaucracy that is constantly evolving on this very gray area. The law is not clear and not clear for a reason. You're still supposed to work in the spirit of the law, but you could be sued at any point. And that's exactly where agencies are, why they have these big groups of people who are working to try to make sure that we remain in compliance.
Because of course we think diversity is important. Of course we think that having representation of all of these groups is important. But the question is, who decided these groups?
Well, we get to that. Mm-hmm. That certainly is discussed. Ultimately, it is a very gray area in so many ways. And the penalties of being sued are so grand.
Mm.
It's just very clear.
Stifling.
Many times, going back to your point, some of the, like if we needed a racial quota, a lot of the categories that were picked, they haven't been around forever.
Mm-hmm.
They were, somebody had to design that. And that is the other part that's really interesting. Are Indians Asian according to diversity?
Right.
We don't know. And that's exactly, I'm sorry. I'm sure somebody in human resources knows or has figured out how they are going to define it.
Right.
But certainly that is a very interesting question. And is it fair to lump up the Japanese Americans and the Chinese Americans and the Vietnamese Americans and any other Asian group together as one group along with Pacific Islanders? And this is part of, you know, why did this happen?
Hmm.
And it really was either a government agency or a corporation or some group determined that this is how we're going to define people. And once you define someone, and means that at that point you can kind of do some enforcement.
Hmm.
So I use that one, and there's a bunch of other ones in there. I commend the presentation of this book because it is fascinating, because you're dealing with a philosophy that all humans matter and that people with their merits should be able to rise and any number of things. But the blowback of that is we've created a quota system,
mm-hmm,
that we have to have, you know, a person from this group and this group and this group and this group.
These arbitrary groups that we've decided upon.
And there's the whole point is no one's saying that we all shouldn't be represented. But at the same time, is it fair where individuals aren't treated as individuals?
Right.
And you are seeing the challenge of trying to define and then enforce and then be the person who's got to kind of tiptoe their way through trying to get through this minefield to meet some kind of standard that, I mean, intellectually, we kind of understand. But we kind of, at that point, you know, are appalled at it, too. This is a very interesting study. Not everybody's going to agree with the conclusions this person comes to. But I think that, you know, for a person who has interest of why we've had this growth of human resources, which used to be a very small department, you will quickly understand what the problems are and what the challenges are. And, you know, the idea is, how do you solve this? And, you know, it may be beyond, that may be for the next generation.
It might be for the next generation. We might look back upon this time where we are focusing on diversity in such a scattershot way, really, and trying to involve all of these groups, again, that we don't need to separate into groups.
Well, and there's the challenge of it. I mean, truly, you can talk about it over and over and over, and all you do is sound like a bad person. But deep down, you know, every person has the right to live, exist, and if they have the interest and the intellect and the skills, the cream should be able to rise. And, you know, we're, you know, using the movie that we just discussed, The Long Game, where a group of Mexican Americans were being discriminated with, we can actively see that, mm-hmm. oh, that's not fair.
That's not okay.
But, you know, in today's society, are we creating discrimination as we try to solve it?
That's a big question that we've been dealing with for a long time, is where does this come from? This is an interesting study into that idea, and maybe will spark you into thinking about how you deal with everybody.
So as we tiptoe through this conversation, Steve, we should probably just end that it was released just last year. If you have interest in it, just pick it up. Once again, it's a provocateur who's put together some really interesting information.
That's The Origins of Woke, Civil Rights Law, Corporate America, and the Triumph of Identity Politics, published in 2023 by Richard Hanania.
Scroll with it.
Brings us to our Scroll with It. I'm busy, Chip. What's happening in the world?
Well, what's happening in the world, Steve, is, you know, some of us like food. Yeah. And some of us like food a lot more than other people. And some of us are willing to travel to restaurants for endless shrimp.
Endless shrimp is the headline for this week, ladies and gentlemen. Red Lobster may be eyeing bankruptcy after endless shrimp cost them almost $11 million.
Didn't they have this happen just a few years ago with like lobster, like a lobster fest or something?
Uh-huh.
Or crab fest? But anyway, it was like, well, people came in and listen, I can tell you they weren't taking Ozempic, Steve.
They were Americans going to Red Lobster. $11 million worth of shrimp is a lot of shrimp, my friend. Restaurants live and die on such a narrow margin. You have to find a way to get people in. And endless shrimp is a great way to have people come in, but then that could be very expensive, and maybe that ends your business.
Well, yes. And one of the things about Red Lobster is that they do not use frozen. They fly in their seafood daily.
Wow.
So it is, well, I'm assuming.
I'm saying wow. Listen to me saying wow, because I live in the Midwest and I don't eat seafood at all.
Well, I do, Steve. I grew up on the coast.
Yes, you did.
And yes, we ate a lot of seafood.
Okay.
And that was one of the things I really loved about North Carolina. I love flounder. I love shrimp. I love oysters. Oh, my goodness.
I grew up near Wisconsin. I love cheese.
Exactly. Well, up here, we have walleye and stuff like that.
Catfish.
We certainly do.
I know that one.
There you go. Bass.
I think I've eaten it once.
Oh, my goodness. You should eat. There's a lot of good fats. In fact, salmon should be part of all of our diets.
I'll put it on my bagel. Hey.
That's right, Steve. Anyway, they had this same thing happen a couple years ago. Maybe it's a good idea not to do endless anything, Steve.
Welcome to America. Have your endless something.
You know, even crazier than that, think about where shrimp comes from.
Oh, the...
And mm-hmm. and the expose that happened, mm-hmm. I don't know, a number of years ago, where we figured out that slaves were basically packaging our shrimp.
Yes, I think about that often. I do still eat shrimp, but I do think of that every time I do it, and I feel bad. That's my Catholic side.
Well, in North Carolina, that you can actually buy shrimp from the boat. It's significantly more expensive.
Okay.
So shrimp is a pretty inexpensive protein, especially when you have slaves cleaning it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when you have fresh seafood, it's, you know, from a local person, it's a little more expensive, and, like, significantly more expensive.
I know nothing about seafood. What I do know is C2E2, Chicago's Comic and Entertainment Expo, is coming this weekend. I am excited. You know how much I love conventions. This is the huge Chicago convention. All of my friends are going to be there. I am excited to see all of the fun stories. Whether I will actually make it out to this weekend to see C2E2 is a question mark, but I will be living vicariously through all of you who are going to be publishing all of your fun at that convention.
Hey, Steve, I know Thanos is going to be there. I heard he's going to be there in a snap.
And our favorite famous artist, Art Balthazar, will be there for sure. He's already been showing off some of the things he's going to have at his table. A tiny Hellboy collection that he's going to be selling. He's got some interesting art that he's pressing.
I know Christo Fernandez is going to be there. So all those people who watch Ted Lasso,
okay.
Football is life. That guy's going to be there.
There's so much soccer in this show. This is the most soccer episode of Too Much Scrolling we've ever had.
Well, it's not the only soccer, Steve. There's another football.
That's right, Chip. The better football is coming back. The rebirth of the Arena Football League. Yes.
The better
football. I love Arena Football. You know this. I was the mascot for the Chicago Rush for over 10 years. The Arena Football League is coming back on the NFL Network starting this week. And I am excited to see the indoor game.
Maybe you could cosplay as Dancing Steve.
Dancing Steve has no G. Dancing Steve is a wholly different guy. I'm excited for that smaller game and the excitement that small arena brings.
And for those who don't know, there Dancing Steve was always at the Chicago Rush games doing some dancing.
First game and the last game. Thank you very much. I had a lot of fun for 10 years. My kids grew up with that as a part of their life. I'm excited for it. I don't know, Chip. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think?
Only if we can come back next week, Steve.
I think we can. We will find out after all of this excitement and all these things that are coming up. We would love to hear from you. Give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-410-4TMS. Our website is TooMuchScrolling.com. Our email is TooMuchScrolling@gmail.com. We're on all the social medias. We're on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and YouTube. And you can always ask your smart speaker to play the latest episode of Too Much Scrolling. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hassenflow.
We'll see you in the future. Football. I got you. I went shopping.
Football is life.
I got you a football.